Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo. And along with Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Artistic Administrator Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists, it is my pleasure to introduce you to the music we'll be hearing as part of Music at Menlo's 2011 season, Through Brahms. This season, Music at Menlo illuminates the historical magnitude of the music of Johannes Brahms. Brahms represents the zenith of the Viennese classical tradition, a tradition cultivated throughout the 18th and 19th centuries by a hallowed lineage of composers, beginning with Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. Brahms's earliest works immediately drew comparisons with the greatest of his predecessors. Upon his arrival in Vienna, the musical community quickly proclaimed him the heir of Beethoven. Brahms built on the model of his forebears to create a distinct and powerful voice. He embraced centuries of tradition as a pathway to new and genuine artistic expression. Along the way, he created some of history's greatest chamber music. And in forging such a towering body of work, which no musician has since been able to ignore, Brahms has continued to inspire the most forward-looking composers of the 20th and 21st centuries. This summer features a series of six main concert programs highlighting different facets of Brahms's artistry. These are complemented by a two-concert presentation of the Brahms string quartets, the festival's Carte Blanche concert series of artist-curated recitals, and our Signature Encounters series, which, along with audio notes, provide thorough context to the festival's many concert offerings. We're glad to have you with us for what promises to be another exciting season at Music at Menlo. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
This summer's first concert program, The Young Eagle, marvels at the fully-fledged artistic maturity of the young Brahms. By the time he turned 20 in 1853, Brahms had mastered the classical idiom of Mozart and grasped the nascent romanticism of Schubert's final works. In that same year, Brahms traveled to Dusseldorf to play his compositions for Robert Schumann, at that time Western Europe's leading composer. Schumann would represent an important twofold influence on Brahms, serving as both artistic model and personal mentor. 1853 also marked the start of Brahms's work on one of his greatest masterpieces, the monumental Opus 8 Piano Trio. This early manifestation of Brahms's genius immediately stood shoulder to shoulder with the piano trios of Beethoven, Schubert, and Mendelssohn, prompting Schumann to christen Brahms the Young Eagle. En route to finding his own creative voice, Brahms assimilated the essentials of the classical tradition. This tradition, informed by Enlightenment values such as reason and humanism, manifested itself musically in a renewed emphasis on formal and expressive clarity. Following the ornate and heavily contrapuntal music of the Baroque period, musical textures became more transparent and conversational. Melodies exchanged ornament for clarity and concision. The classical style, foreshadowed in the works of late Baroque composers like Georg Philipp Telemann and Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, and more thoroughly worked out by Joseph Haydn, came to full maturity in the music of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, whose violin sonata in E minor, K304, begins Concert Program 1.
The E minor sonata, composed in 1778, is the sixth of Mozart's 15 mature sonatas for violin and keyboard. It is unique among the sonatas for being the only one in a minor key. Though darker in character, it is similar to the rest of the sonatas in its conversational quality, as with the most quintessentially classical chamber works of this period. Each instrument has a distinct identity, and the spirit of the piece derives from the dialogue that unfolds between them. The E minor sonata is a compact work, comprising only two movements. The second movement is an understated minuet.
Another formative early influence on Brahms was Franz Schubert. Schubert lived from 1797 to 1828, and represents the latter bookend of the classical period. He worked within the musical forms he inherited from Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven, producing 9 symphonies, 20 string quartets, roughly a dozen piano sonatas. Add to that, perhaps his greatest accomplishment, a staggering catalog of more than 600 Lieder, or art songs. But in the subjective depth of emotional expression contained in his music, Schubert looked beyond the classical pedigree of his predecessors and foresaw the aesthetic movement that would define the Romantic generation.
Schubert composed his single movement Nocturnal for piano, violin, and cello near the end of his life. Along with his larger, more famous statements in the piano trio genre, the trios in B-flat major and E-flat major, the Nocturnal is among Schubert's final pieces of chamber music. The work exemplifies the traits of Romanticism, but tempered with a kind of classical restraint. Nowhere in its 10 minutes of music does it demonstrate the fiery extremes of other works composed in his final years.
Thank you. After Schubert's death, arguably with the exception of Felix Mendelssohn, who lived from 1809 to 1847, the German composer Robert Schumann emerged as the most important musical figure of the early Romantic period. He was not only one of the 19th century's most significant composers, but also a prolific writer and influential music critic. It was Schumann whose guidance Brahms sought in 1853, and his endorsement that would help establish Brahms's reputation among Europe's musical elite. Just as Schumann's music exhibited the hallmarks of Romanticism, so did the events of his life. When he was 18 years old, he traveled to Leipzig to study with the pianist Friedrich Wieck, whose 9-year-old daughter, Clara, was also a gifted pianist. Robert and Clara developed a close friendship, which blossomed years later into an intense love affair. After a protracted legal battle with Clara's forbidding father, the two were married in 1840. By the mid-1840s, Schumann's physical and mental health both began to decline. He frequently battled bouts of depression, insomnia, and eventually psychosis. In late February of 1854, just months after he first met Brahms, Schumann's mental state reached its nadir, and after weeks of unbearable psychotic episodes, he attempted to kill himself by jumping into the Rhine. Following his suicide attempt, Schumann demanded that he be committed to a mental asylum for fear of inadvertently harming Clara or their children. He was sent to an asylum in Bonn in 1854 and never saw his children again. He starved himself to death 2 years later. Clara was not permitted to see her husband until the day before he died.
Schumann composed his Fairy Tales, Opus 132, for clarinet, viola, and piano in October 1853, shortly after meeting Brahms on September 30th of that year, and less than 5 months before his suicide attempt. Despite its close proximity to the profoundest trauma of Schumann's life, the work suggests nothing of the tumult that the composer was soon to experience. The first movement is warm and bright. The vocal quality of Schumann's melodic writing for both the clarinet and viola echoes the song without words genre innovated by Felix Mendelssohn. The second movement strays from the first movement's flowing lyricism, adopting instead a jaunty, march-like gait. But despite its more martial carriage, the music retains its sunny demeanor. Music's effortless character belies its sophisticated construction. Demonstrating the influence of Beethoven, the composer whom Schumann, like every composer of his generation, most idolized, much of the musical material contained in Schumann's Fairy Tales derives from one short motif. If you listen carefully, you'll hear that this phrase in the second movement comes from this gesture in the first movement. The slow, serene third movement departs even further from the character of the first two movements, but the same germinal motif is present here as well. Beneath the long, breathless melodies spun by the clarinet and viola, this motif runs steadily throughout the piano accompaniment. Thank you. The motif comes to the fore midway through the slow movement in this tender dialogue between the viola and clarinet. Work closes with a lively finale. Again, Schumann begins the movement with the work's germinal motif, now presented as a confident, dotted rhythm figure in the piano. The viola and the clarinet respond with exuberant, melodic outbursts.
In the weeks and months after arriving unannounced at their doorstep, with only a letter of introduction from the violinist Josef Joachim and a stack of scores, Brahms developed a deep and often complicated friendship with Robert and Clara Schumann. This summer's second encounter, Brahms and the Schumanns, led by Michael Parloff, explores this relationship further. One immediate result of the close bond between Brahms and Robert Schumann was the FAE Sonata, a four-movement work for violin and piano, composed collaboratively by Schumann, Brahms, and Schumann's composition student Albert Dietrich. The sonata was intended as a gift for Joachim, a close acquaintance to each of the three composers. Robert Schumann conceived of the idea for the joint composition. Joachim had adopted for himself the romantic-sounding motto Frei aber einsam, free but lonely. Schumann, Brahms, and Dietrich turned this into a musical motto for the sonata, FAE. Each composer was to build a movement of the sonata on this motto, with Joachim charged to guess who had composed each movement. Dietrich composed the first movement, Schumann composed a short romance for the second movement, Brahms provided the fiery scherzo movement, and Schumann wrote the finale. Joachim forever treasured and jealously guarded the manuscript. Near the end of his life, he allowed only Brahms's scherzo to be published. Today, the FAE Sonata is rarely performed in its collaborative entirety, but Brahms's pithy C minor scherzo has become a widely beloved favorite of the romantic violin repertoire.
In 1853, the same momentous year in which he met Robert and Clara Schumann, the 20-year-old Brahms set to work on what would become one of his grandest contributions to the chamber music repertoire, the Piano Trio in B Major, Opus 8. Though Brahms had by this time produced numerous chamber works, all were withheld from publication. A notorious perfectionist, Brahms famously burned countless manuscripts throughout his career that did not meet his uncompromising standards. The Opus 8 Trio is the first chamber work that Brahms saw fit to publish, and even in this case, he returned to the work and made revisions to it more than three decades later.
Of course, the major thing to talk about with this piece is that it represents both youthful Brahms and mature Brahms.
Cellist Lawrence Lesser.
He wrote it when he was 21, and when he came back in 1891 to rework it, it was near the end of his life, and certainly he was at his greatest maturity at that point. It's a piece in grand proportion. I consider it one of his really greatest pieces. It's generous, it's inventive, it's warm, it's dramatic, it has so many different elements in it that I don't think you can ever really get to the bottom of it. It starts with this flowing, wonderful theme that is like Schubert almost. It's so long and generous.
This music steadily unfolds toward an emphatic proclamation by all three instruments, quickly foiled by a hushed transformation of the theme. Piano quietly introduces the second theme, which, like the first, quickly expands in a series of long, breathless melodies, each flowing organically into the next. The melodic wealth of the first movement's opening section, or the exposition, yields an equally rich development section, where Brahms transfigures the movement's thematic material to explore broad, expressive terrain. Thank you. In contrast to the first movement's majestic carriage, the scherzo gallops at a light and slightly mischievous gait. In true romantic fashion, Brahms sets this musical idea in emotive extremes, alternating whispered restraint with dramatic exclamations. The scherzo's middle section, called in musical terms the trio section, offers another expressive contrast. Brahms offsets the scherzo's austerity with a sentimental Viennese waltz.
Another thing that I think is very interesting in Brahms is Brahms was, of course, German, born in Hamburg, but he lived most of his maturity in Vienna. And the cultures, although they share the German language, are quite different. Time for a story about that. This is kind of something that I use to illustrate what I'm talking about. If you can imagine in the 19th century that there is a war involving Germany, that at some point in the war, the generals get together in Berlin to discuss the situation, and they come to the conclusion that the situation is serious, but not desperate. Now, imagine a second scenario where there is a war involving Austria, Vienna. The generals come together in Vienna. This is also the 19th century. And they're trying to figure out what is the situation, and after a long discussion, they decide that the situation is desperate. It's not serious. So it's kind of a joke, but I mean, basically there is a lighter touch toward life, or a kind of a we'll survive in Vienna. Movement is so incredibly interior, the way it begins, so restrained. And then that opens up to this magnificent melody in the cello, which is just pouring his heart out. And at the end of the movement, it just goes back to where it started with some really unexpected harmonies that are just thrilling and chilling to listen to. That leads into the finale, which is, it always reminds me of Ravel's La Valse. It is a waltz-type melody, and it keeps going around in circles. It seems like a swirling melody.
As in the second movement, the finale juxtaposes this agile Viennese waltz with music of a more intense Germanic flavor.
When you listen to the last movement of the B major trio, the opening of it sounds really very much like Vienna. A swirling kind of waltz. And then in the middle of this comes the second theme, which is so incredibly German. With the accompaniment on the offbeat, almost like somebody's wearing boots. And that, for me, is one of the fascinating things about Brahms always, is that all of his life there is the mixture in his music of these two very different kinds of German culture elements.
Audio notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts on this disc appear courtesy of the following performers and organizations: Johannes Brahms' Opus 8 Piano Trio, performed by the Florestan Trio, and Opus 18 Sextet, performed by the Raphael Ensemble, Franz Schubert's Notturno, performed by the Florestan Trio, and Johann Sebastian Bach's Cello Suite No. 2, performed by Stephen Isserlis, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's Violin Sonata in E minor, K304, performed by Itzhak Perlman and Daniel Barenboim, Johann Sebastian Bach's The Art of Fugue, performed by the Emerson String Quartet, and Arnold Schoenberg's Opus 47 Fantasy, performed by Gidon Kramer, appear with kind permission of Deutsche Grammophon GmbH Hamburg, www.deutschegrammophon.com. Brahms' Scherzo in C minor, performed by Itzhak Perlman and Vladimir Ashkenazi, and Sergei Rachmaninoff's Vocalise, performed by Itzhak Perlman and Samuel Sanders, appear courtesy of EMI Classics. Brahms' Sonata for Two Pianos, Opus 34b, is performed by Paulina Zamora and John Milbauer, and appears courtesy of Eroica Records. Robert Schumann's Fairy Tales, performed by David Schifrin, Paul Neubauer, and Gilles von Sattel, and John Harbison's Piano Quintet, performed by Gilbert Kalisch and the Orion String Quartet, appear courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 5, performed by Carol Winsence, Philip Setzer, Kenneth Cooper, Barry Schiffman, Jeff Nuttall, Leslie Robertson, David Finkel, and Charles Chandler, and Brahms' Opus 34 Piano Quintet, performed by Wuhan, Georgia Flizanis, Ian Swenson, Cynthia Phelps, and Ralph Kirschbaum, appear courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.